tasmat bhavadibhi kartvyam karmanam trigunatmanam bijaniharanam yoga pravaho paramo dhyā. Therefore, my dear friends, O sons of the demons, your duty is to take to Krishna consciousness, which can burn the seed of fructive activities artificially created by the modes of material nature and stop the flow of the intelligence in wakefulness, dreaming and deep sleep. In other words, when one takes to Krishna consciousness, his ignorance is immediately vanquished. So, this is Narada Muni speaking to the demons. When Prahlad Maharaj was in the womb. And Prahlad Maharaj, by hearing all this, even though Narada, you could see that Krishna consciousness is very much an internal thing, it's not an external. It's not something that is absorbed by the format of the ear or by recording machine, but is absorbed by the soul, by something spiritual. Because the demons, even though they heard the instructions of Narada Muni, but it came in one ear and went out in another ear. You could see that, but Prahlad Maharaj, he was in the womb. He was actually in a different situation. There was less chance for him to hear the sound vibration of his spiritual master, Narada Muni. But nevertheless, he absorbed the instructions of Narada Muni. With his heart and soul. And Prahlad Maharaj, he was at the stage of 9 months in the womb. And it says that in the Purana, that in the Bhagavad Gita also, that once one comes to the ninth month in the womb, the child is feeling so uncomfortable and suffering. He can't breathe. The worms are eating his delicate skin. The parasites are sucking up his blood. And he's in great pain. Contained in a very small area. He doesn't have much chance to move around. Sometimes the children, they can't even move. In fact, the head has to go down for the mother to give birth to the baby. But very often they're so entrapped in that situation that they can't move. And as a result, the women, they have to have a cesarean to have the child coming out. So that is the time in that situation when the jiva, he prays to the Paramatma. He prays to the Lord into the heart. And those prayers are very sincere. It's said in the Bhagavad Gita that the jiva prays to Krishna, to God. Yes, I'm aware of your existence. You are my eternal friend. And he offers beautiful prayer. Of course, we don't remember now all these prayers. But it is said that every jiva, when he's in the womb, the human jiva, I mean, when he's carrying the human body, he's praying to the Paramatma. And because he's suffering so much, and he promised to the Lord that when I come out, I will surrender my life to you. But then we forget. Birth is just the same like death. It's just the flip side of the same coin. Death makes you forget everything. Birth makes you forget everything. We break our promise to surrender to Krishna. Few of us, we've been fortunate to resume our promise. That's why we are here today. So, Prahlad Maharaj, he was absorbing this transcendental knowledge from Narada Muni. But the demons, they could not. Why? Because they were influenced, as he says here, by the three modes of material energies. And those three modes, they give a rise to different types of desires and actions, which are called fruitive activities, like Narada Muni says. O sons of the demons, your duty is to take to Krishna consciousness, which can burn the seed of fruitive activities artificially. Now, the word artificially is mentioned, created by the modes of material nature. Just like when the mind thinks artificially is creating so many images, how to gratify the senses, how to serve the senses. And they're all born from mental speculation, mental utopia. So they're artificial. The desires that we have, they're all artificial. They're not realistic. They're not concrete. It's like chasing the will of the wisp. So, because they have a beginning and end, and when we think that we are enjoying, it's none other than the space between two suffering. So you're just getting little relief. Like when people, they drink, or they smoke, or they eat a lot, or they have sex, or they have whatever they do to gratify the senses. It is said that they're just creating a suspense. They're just getting a little relief from the suffering. They're forgetting the suffering for the time being. But it doesn't mean that they're enjoying. Just like a camel, Prabhupada, he calls this artificial sense gratification avaranatmika shakti. It's described in the second canto. If you want to know, have a look in the folio, computer. Avaranatmika shakti, you have a bairanga shakti, the forceful energy, the ladini shakti, which is the devotional energy that we are engaging in. And then you have the avaranatmika shakti, which is the bewildering energy. That's why it's called artificial, because it's an illusion. And Prabhupada gives the example of the camel. The camel is things that he's enjoying by eating the thorns from the tree. And he's mixing the thorns, they are ripping his tongue and his mouth. And the thorns mixed with blood, then he swallows the prasad for him, and he thinks he's enjoying. So similarly, when people they engage in sense gratification, namely drinking, taking drugs, discharging semen, whatever it is, it's all drawing blood. We're doing harm to the body. What we think that gives pleasure to the body materially, it's actually giving harm to the body. But we are not conscious of it. That's why what is Bhagavad Gita again says, what is a sage, what is a daylight for a sage is a night for the materialist person. And what is night for a materialist person is a daylight for the sage. So what is enjoyment for a materialist person is poison for a spiritualist person. Shri Radha Gokulananda Ki Jai. But at the same time, the austerity that devotees, they perform, the spiritualists perform, it's an enjoyment. It is actually, it's good for the body. Austerity doesn't kill. Yoga, it doesn't kill anyone. It doesn't kill the body, but makes the body. Have you noticed it sometimes, you know, you take a cold shower, it appears to be very, something very painful for the body. In the beginning you feel like it's a shock for the body, but then you have to judge the activities by the result. Then afterwards you feel warm. Have you noticed it? In the summer, when I was brahmachari, I was in India once, and it was so hot. And people, they go in the cold shower, but then when they come out, they feel again, you know, the reaction of the hot, of the heat. So if you take a very hot shower in the summer, then you see afterwards you feel cool. So in the winter you take a cold shower, afterwards you feel warmer. You know, you feel good. So it's the body, it has to be trained into performing. It is made for tapasya, tapo devyam, the divine tapasya, which is linked with Krishna, for the pleasure of Krishna. And that's yoga that Narada Muni is talking about, yeah. And then later on he says, when we do that, when we perform this yoga, then we develop this love for Krishna. It's not that we develop, but we awaken. We transcend these three stages of wakefulness, sleep and deep sleep, and then the soul becomes activated. We again start to see things, we start to hear things, but not with our own eyes, but with the eyes of knowledge, realization, we can start to feel things. The real life begins when there is a cessation of material activities, and we activate the spiritual activities, which are pushed by the catalyst element of the soul. The soul is the principle, the driving principle behind the consciousness and the material body. But very often it's such a subtle, it's the most subtle things that we cannot perceive it, that we are made of that energy, the spiritual. We cannot perceive it if we are engrossed in material sense gratification. So Narada Muni is trying to wake up the demons, but they cannot. They remain in deep sleep because of this desire for fruitive activities. And therefore they have to be, they're entangled into this samsara of chewing the chut, punya, punya, shravana, shravana. They chew things that they've been already chewing in previous lives. So later on, Narada Muni gives different process how to awaken this the soul from this dormant stage. And he says one should accept a bona fide spiritual master, which is in the next verse. The person who will be giving class tomorrow, day after tomorrow. And start, that's part of the devotional service. Because he's explaining here, one should take to Krishna consciousness. What does that mean, Krishna consciousness? It means devotional service, bhajana kriya. What does it mean, bhajana kriya? Bhajana kriya means accepting a spiritual master, a guidance, and we perform some devotional service under his guidance. One must accept the bona fide spiritual master and render service unto him with a great devotion and faith. Whatever one has in one's possession should be offered to the spiritual master. And the association of saintly persons and devotees, one should worship the Lord, hear the glories of the Lord with faith, glorify the transcendental qualities and activities of the Lord. Always meditate on the Lord's lotus feet and worship the deities of the Lord strictly according to the injunctions of the Shastra and Guru. Then later on it goes into deity worship and then into and then the last piece of instructions he gives is the highest principle of devotional service, which is, it's above all the nine process. Which one is? No. Yes. Remember Krishna, never forget Krishna, which is the pinnacle, the crown jewel of bhajana kriya, of devotional service. To always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. So, it is a gradual process. We have to go through these things, you know, to, like he says, you know, with great faith, we should hear about the glories of Krishna. That's why we come every day for Srimad Bhagavatam class, to hear about Krishna. Krishna is writing to us, our beloved Father, Aham Bija Pradapita. He's eternally our Father. Either we are in Maya, or we are liberated, or we are rejecting him as an impersonalist. But nevertheless, Krishna never rejects. He's left us this beautiful message, Srimad Bhagavatam. And every day, when we come for class, it's like Krishna, our lover, is writing to us. One, Rushila Rupa Goswami says that one should develop love for Krishna in the same way like a young boy is in love with his paramour, with his girlfriend, and he's always thinking of her. And when the letter comes, then with great anxiety he's opening it, he smells the paper, he reads the message, and he remembers immediately the feature of his lover, and he starts to feel something. Then he reads, and so Srila Rupa Goswami says, you know, in the same way we should read the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's like the message, the letter of our lover, Krishna. And we should smell it. Do you ever smell Srimad Bhagavatam? It always has a beautiful fragrance. It's not different from Krishna. It's not actually... Never think that this is paper or ink. But it's actually... they're non-different from the lotus feet of Krishna. And makes you a member of Krishna. What to speak when you read the message? So that much attachment we have to have for the Bhagavatam. Inside, you know, when we open it, let me see what Krishna is writing to me. What is the message? Have you ever experienced when you are in depression or you are a little bit down and you just want, you know, you're feeling that, you know, where are you, my Lord? And then you open up the Bhagavad Gita, the Bhagavatam, at random. And immediately he sends you the message. He's writing to you. That's how much Krishna loves us. But we forget. We don't know how much the Lord, he loves the living entities, because you can only fathom or measure a little bit of the love of Krishna that he has for us with the love that you have for him. If we don't have any love for Krishna, then we cannot understand how much he loves us. The child, when he's small, is kicking the father. He hates the father because the father doesn't give him the toys or sense gratification. But does that mean the father doesn't love him? He tolerates the kicks. And the mother, when the child is in the womb, is also kicking and screaming and pinching, turning around. But the mother is tolerating and still loves the child. So that's a little glimpse how much Krishna loves us. There is the hierarchy of love explained by the Acharya, that an impersonalist person is actually even lower than the demons, materialistic demons. Because he can't preach. Narada Muni, have you ever heard Narada Muni speaking to an impersonalist? Or have you ever tried to preach to an impersonalist? They don't accept you. They don't even see you. Of course, they see you with their own eyes, but you don't exist for them. God doesn't exist. So therefore, they feel no love and no hate. That it's painful. Krishna prefers more hate than if you don't feel anything at all. So this is the impersonalist. And that's why the impersonalists, they're actually the lowest. They're the ones giving more pain to Krishna. And it is described that the materialistic demons, they're higher than the impersonalist. Why? Because at least they have a bhava. You can have either a bhakti bhava, a devotional feeling towards Krishna, or you can have asurik bhava, a demoniac feeling, hate. Just like if you read in the first canto, Srila Prabhupada gives very nice description there, the evidence why the demons, they are more higher. The materialistic demons are higher than the impersonalist. When Hiranyaksha, he was beat up by the he was in the war with Varahadev. Varahadev, he came and he was tolerating all the blows with a club from the this terrible demon, and he was swearing at him. Also, he was insulting the Lord, calling him a hog, a pig, dirty, smelly pig. And you live, you know, in a very low class places. And all these things, they were actually hurting the feeling of the law, but he loved it. If you read in the purport there, Prabhupada said he, when the Lord received the club on his face, on his chest, it was like he took it as a garland. And an insult of Hiranyaksha, he took them as glorification of the hymns of the Vedas. Why? Because at least that hateful mood, it was a feeling. At least he was addressing the Lord as a person. Isn't it? When you're facing someone, you had an argument with someone, would you feel more pleasure if the person walks away and he doesn't acknowledge your existence? Or when the person, you know, he expresses his anger towards you? It's, you know, at least you know, you understand why he's angry. But at least he's addressing you as a person. And imagine a friend of yours, he doesn't speak to you ever anymore. 10 years, 20 years. Or you have someone, a friend of yours becomes your enemy, but he carry on speaking to you and giving you a hard time. You prefer more that, because, you know, at least he's having a relationship with you. He's acknowledging you as a friend, as a person. That's why a demon is higher than the impersonalist. So therefore, a demon, it says that He hates, but and he doesn't love, but he hates materialistic person. And then there is higher than that, is the neophyte spiritualist, like myself. Then you love. You don't love, but you want to be loved. You acknowledge the presence of God, but you want you require attention from Krishna, like a baby. A baby, he doesn't have much feeling, but you know, he wants the love and attention from his mother. But he's very selfish. This is a neophyte, a kanista. And then higher than that is the devotee. He loves only if he's loved. So it's business. I'm your friend if you are my friend. If you love me, I love you. Most of the marriage in these worlds are like that. And as soon as one of them breaks the friendship, then is a problem. So, and then higher than that is a devotee who loves even if he's not loved. And then higher than that is the position of Krishna. He loves even if he's hated. Just like, you know, Hiranyaksha and Varahadev. So we can understand on which platform we are. The impersonalist, he doesn't love, doesn't hate. The materialist, demons or enjoyers, they don't love, they only hate. And then the neophyte devotee, he has no love. He doesn't hate, but he has no love. But he wants to be loved. And then higher than that, this is all from the Acharya. Higher than that is the advanced devotee. He loves and he wants to be loved. And then even more advanced is the one who loves even if he's not loved. And then the position of Krishna, which cannot be imitated by anybody, is that he loves even if he's hated. You can see that the Lord has proved that. Even the most, it is said, the Acharya, they explain, you know, even the most advanced devotee, will they be willing to go as a paramatma into the heart of the person who hate them? And accompanying them, you know, for billions of lives. Like, you know, like snakes, worms, and these low species of life. That species, because it's a reflection of the hate that they have for the living entities and for God. But Krishna, he does that. He enters, he accompanies that jiva as a paramatma. He carry on loving them. And slowly, very patient, slowly, he's hoping for the day they come to their senses, they come to love him again. So Krishna never gives up his love for us. That's why he's the only one who deserves to be a paramatma. Omnipresent into the heart of everyone, not just one living entity. He takes care of everybody, of all the liberated souls and all those who are entangled into this world. So this is the position of God. This is just a little understanding from the message of Narada Muni, how to develop our relationship, to wake up our love for Krishna. He's always very anxious to see the living entities going back to him. It is said that this little child is a feature of Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan. Even though he's performing pastimes with the gopis and with everyone, but still there is a feature of him that he's just on the border of Goloka Vrindavan, and he's with the hands like this, he's is always looking when the conditioned soul is coming to him, coming back to him. So this is another feature of Krishna. He's always waiting for us. And therefore, why not go towards him? You know, our real treasure is there. We got everything there. He even says, you know, if you want the material things, just worship me. He doesn't say you have to give up everything and, you know, only love me and worship. He says in the Bhagavatam, akama sarva kama.